Ever get the feeling that some paintings just pull you in? That's how it is with Caravaggio's The Taking of Christ.
Yeah.
It's this whirlwind of drama and symbolism and even like a possible self-portrait.
Right.
All wrapped up in one incredible masterpiece.
What's so fascinating about this painting is that Caravaggio, I mean, he doesn't just depict the arrest of Jesus. He throws you right into the middle of it.
And the story of how this artwork was practically lost and then rediscovered, it's like something straight out of an art history thriller.
It really is.
But before we get to that, let's set the stage a little bit. You've shared some sources with us about Caravaggio himself, who this guy was.
Sure.
So who was he?
Think of the most intense, like, rock star painter of the 1600s. That's Caravaggio. This Italian artist was all about drama. A total game changer in the Baroque movement.
And he was famous for this technique, right? Chiaroscuro, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds a bit intimidating when you say it like that.
Not at all. Imagine a spotlight on a darkened stage highlighting the most important action.
Okay.
That's basically what Caravaggio did, but with paint. He used this powerful contrast between deep shadows and these bursts of brilliant light to create these incredibly realistic, almost tangible scenes.
And he used that technique to, like, incredible effect in The Taking of Christ. By the way, it's currently at the National Gallery of Ireland.
That's right.
Just imagine, like, stumbling upon that in person.
I know, right?
So let's dive into the actual scene that Caravaggio paints. What's happening here? Give us the breakdown.
So Caravaggio captures the exact moment when Judas betrays Jesus, leading to his arrest.
Right.
Jesus is there, bathed in this, like, almost ethereal light, and his expression is just this powerful mix of, I don't know, resignation and sorrow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Judas, his face partially hidden in shadow, leaning in for that infamous kiss.
And then there's this other figure, this disciple, who looks like he's practically falling out of the painting and right into the viewer's lap, practically.
Yeah.
I read that's John, right? The way he's positioned is so interesting. Like, why do you think Caravaggio did that?
You're right. It's a really unusual detail. That is John. And some art historians believe that Caravaggio deliberately positioned him that way to create this sense of, like, dynamic energy, like he's being thrust towards us, you know?
Right.
It's all part of that signature Baroque style.
Yeah. It definitely makes the whole scene just feel more chaotic and real. But there's another figure I want to ask about. The guy holding the lantern.
Right.
I've heard there's a theory that it's actually a self-portrait of Caravaggio himself.
Oh, yeah.
Is that true?
That's right. That's a detail that's been debated by art historians for decades. Caravaggio was actually known to insert himself into his paintings, often in these subtle, unexpected ways.
Okay, but why include himself in this scene? It's not like he was, like, there at the actual arrest, or is there something more to it?
That's the million-dollar question. But remember what we said about Caravaggio and, like, his love of symbolism?
Right, right.
Well, some scholars believe that the lantern bearer doesn't just represent Caravaggio. He also represents St. Peter, who, as you know, famously denied knowing Jesus three times.
Ah, I see where you're going with this. The lantern becomes this symbol not just of, like, physical light, but also of spiritual illumination.
Right.
Of faith.
Exactly.
And yet at the same time, it also represents the potential for darkness, for denial.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Are you saying Caravaggio might be implying we're all capable of that kind of betrayal?
It's definitely a possibility. And let's not forget, Caravaggio himself was a pretty complex figure. He had a reputation for brawling, for being rebellious, even getting into trouble with the law. So this potential self-portrait could also be seen as his way of acknowledging his own flaws, his own struggles with good and evil.
Interesting.
It's like he's saying, hey, even someone like me with all my imperfections can still grapple with these big questions of faith and betrayal.
It's incredible how much depth and complexity Caravaggio packed into a single scene.
I know.
It's like peeling back the layers of an onion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And speaking of layers, there's another fascinating aspect of this painting I wanted to touch upon.
Okay.
The arresting officer's armor. Have you noticed how prominent it is?
Now that you mention it, yes. It's this big, gleaming pauldron smack dab in the center of the canvas.
Right.
It's almost jarring, like, how much it stands out. Why do you think Caravaggio chose to emphasize it so much?
It's definitely unusual. And it's not just about historical accuracy.
Okay.
Some scholars think it might be a visual clue, a way of forcing us, the viewers, to confront our own capacity for betrayal.
Mm.
Think about it. Armor is often associated with protection.
Right.
With strength.
Yeah.
But here, it almost feels oppressive, even menacing.
You're right. Now that you've pointed it out, it has this, like, unsettling effect. Almost like it's meant to make us a little uncomfortable.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Caravaggio wants us to really think about the choices we make, the potential consequences of our actions.
Wow. So much to unpack in just this one detail.
I know.
And this is just the beginning of our deep dive into the taking of Christ.
We barely scratched the surface. Ready to uncover another layer of this masterpiece.
Absolutely. I'm hooked. What else did you discover about the taking of Christ?
Well, you mentioned that the painting has this way of, like, drawing you in, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's no accident. Remember how we were talking about chiaroscuro earlier?
Yes.
The way Caravaggio uses light and shadow?
Yeah, like a spotlight on a stage.
Exactly. Now think about, like, some of Rembrandt's portraits. That dramatic use of light and shadow, that's chiaroscuro in action.
Mm.
Caravaggio uses that same technique here to create this incredibly intimate atmosphere, almost like you're right there in the scene.
You're right. It's more than just a painting. It feels like an experience. Okay, so we've talked about the figures in the painting, the way they're positioned, the use of light and shadow. What else makes this painting so special?
Well, let's step back for a moment and consider the broader art historical context. Caravaggio, for all his, like, rebelliousness, he didn't exist in a vacuum.
Right.
He was very much a product of his time, mm-hmm. and his work reflects the influences of earlier artists.
So who were, like, Caravaggio's artistic ancestors, so to speak? Whose work inspired him?
One fascinating connection is to the Northern Renaissance.
Okay.
Specifically to the work of Albrecht Dürer.
Okay.
Take a closer look at the central figures in The Taking of Christ, mm-hmm. Jesus and Judas. Their poses, the way their bodies are, like, intertwined.
Yeah.
It's strikingly similar to a woodcut that Dürer created in 1509, also depicting the arrest of Christ.
Wow, you're right. It's like Caravaggio took inspiration from Dürer's composition and then just made it his own, injecting that signature Caravaggio drama and realism.
Exactly.
It's fascinating to see how artists borrow from and build upon the work of those who came before them.
Exactly. And that brings us to one of the most incredible parts of this painting story, its journey through time. For centuries, The Taking of Christ was considered lost.
Oh, yeah.
Vanished without a trace.
The whole lost and found saga, this is where the story takes a turn for, like, the truly unbelievable. Tell me everything. How does a masterpiece like this just disappear?
It all started in Rome. A nobleman named Ciriaco Mattei commissioned this painting directly from Caravaggio back in 1602.
Okay, so far so good. It's with its rightful owner. What went wrong?
Well, through a series of sales and inheritances, mm-hmm. the painting's ownership changed hands several times.
Okay.
And somewhere along the way, it got misattributed.
Right.
They thought it was by one of Caravaggio's followers, a Dutch artist named Gerard van Honthorst.
Wait, seriously? They looked at this painting with its, like, incredible realism and emotion and thought, yep, that's definitely a Honthorst.
It does seem absurd now. But back then, art authentication wasn't an exact science.
Right.
Especially when dealing with works that were, you know, centuries old.
Right.
So this Honthorst painting, as everyone believed it to be, eventually made its way to Ireland, ending up in the hands of an Irish pediatrician, a Dr. Marie Lee Wilson.
Okay, so it's in Ireland, but how in the world did it end up in a Jesuit residence?
Well, in the 1930s, Dr. Lee Wilson decided to donate the painting to the Jesuit fathers in Dublin as, like, a gesture of gratitude for their support during a difficult time. And that's where it remained, hanging in their dining room for decades.
Can you imagine having dinner every night with a genuine Caravaggio just casually hanging on the wall? They had no idea.
It's mind-boggling, right? To them, it was just another painting in the house.
Right. But then comes the twist. Enter Sergio Benedetti, the Sherlock Holmes of the art world.
Right, sure.
How did he enter this story?
It was the early 1990s. Benedetti, an Italian art historian, was brought in to examine some paintings at the Jesuit residence, including this one, which everyone still believed to be a Honthorst.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when things took a dramatic turn.
This is the part where he whips out his magnifying glass and announces, this isn't just a painting, it's a Caravaggio.
Right. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Benedetti had an expert eye. And he immediately suspected that there was something special about this Honthorst.
Yeah.
So they began the meticulous process of cleaning the painting, carefully removing layers of dirt and varnish that had accumulated over the centuries.
I bet it was like watching a masterpiece, like, emerge from hiding.
Exactly. As the grime was stripped away, the vibrant colors and that signature Caravaggio chiaroscuro started to reappear.
Wow.
It was a truly remarkable moment.
But of course, in the art world, a hunch isn't enough.
No.
How did they definitively prove it was a real Caravaggio? They needed, like, cold, hard evidence.
They absolutely did. And the key to, like, cracking this case lay in Italy with the Mattei family archives.
Okay.
Remember, they were the ones who originally commissioned the painting back in 1602.
Okay, so are you about to tell me they found a receipt for the painting tucked away in an old shoebox?
Not quite a receipt,
okay,
but close enough.
Okay.
Two graduate students, Francesca Cappelletti and Laura Testa.
Okay.
They were doing research in the Mattei family archives.
Right.
And they stumbled upon, like, this ancient account book.
Okay, so they did have records.
They did.
Wow.
And this wasn't just any old ledger. It, like, meticulously documented the commission of the taking of Christ, including the exact date.
Okay.
And the payments made to Caravaggio.
So they actually had a paper trail.
They did.
Case closed, right? Mystery solved.
You would think so, wouldn't you? Yeah. But this wouldn't be a true art world saga without one more twist.
Yeah. What else?
It turns out there's another version of the taking of Christ.
No way.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
This one owned by the Cennini family in Florence.
Wait, hold on. Two paintings, both claiming to be the Caravaggio masterpiece. Okay. How can you tell who's who in this art historical showdown?
That's exactly what experts were trying to figure out. For years, the Cennini painting was considered a copy.
Right.
But then in the early 2000s, people started to have second thoughts.
So how did they try to settle this debate? Was it back to the, like, magnifying glasses?
It was a combination of things. Art historians were, like, meticulously comparing the two paintings, looking for clues.
Right.
And one thing they, like, zeroed in on were these things called pentimenti.
Pentimenti. Refresh my memory. What are those again?
They're basically these little alterations an artist makes on the canvas.
Okay.
Like, when they change their mind about a brush stroke.
Right.
Or the position of a figure.
Right.
Think of them as the artist's equivalent of, like, erasing and rewriting, but on a canvas.
Okay.
These pentimenti can actually reveal a lot about an artist's process.
Right.
Their thought process as they were creating the work.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So these pentimenti were, like, hidden messages from Caravaggio himself?
In a way, yeah.
Okay.
And in the Cennini version of The Taking of Christ, there were a lot of pentimenti. This suggested to some experts that this was, like, the original, more experimental version of the painting.
Okay.
The one where Caravaggio was still working out the composition.
Mm-hmm.
They even speculated that Caravaggio might have painted the Dublin version later.
Okay.
Maybe for a different patron.
Okay, so for a minute there, it seemed like the Dublin painting, the one hidden away in that dining room, might actually be a copy.
Right.
What tipped the scales back in its favor?
Well, enter Maurizio Saracini, a specialist in, like, art diagnostics.
Okay.
He analyzed the pigments in both paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where things get really interesting. He discovered Naples yellow in the Cennini painting.
Naples yellow, that's a color, right? What's the big deal?
It is a color, but here's the catch. Naples yellow wasn't widely available in painting until after 1615. And remember, we have documentation that the Dublin Taking of Christ was commissioned back in 1602.
Oh. So the Cennini painting, even if it was a Caravaggio, couldn't have been painted before the Dublin version.
Right.
Because it used a pigment that wasn't even around back then. Talk about a plot twist.
Exactly. That one little detail about the pigment threw a wrench into the whole debate.
Wow.
And while some debate continues, that pigment analysis, combined with the Mattei family's documentation, has led most experts to believe that the Dublin Taking of Christ is the authentic one.
Wow, what a ride. It's amazing how much, like, detective work goes into authenticating a painting.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Especially one as famous and valuable as this. We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive, from hidden details and artistic techniques to, like, lost paintings and pigment analysis. It really shows how much, like, history and drama can be hidden behind a single work of art.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And beyond all the intrigue, I think what's most important is that the Taking of Christ is just this, like, powerful and moving work of art in its own right.
Right.
Caravaggio's use of chiaroscuro, his ability to, like, capture raw human emotion.
Yeah.
It's no wonder this painting continues to captivate audiences, like, centuries later.
It really does. It makes you look at art in a whole new light.
It does.
And speaking of which, knowing everything we now know about the Taking of Christ, its creation, its disappearance, its remarkable rediscovery. Does it change how you see the painting? Mm-hmm. Food for thought. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time.